Hello and welcome to the Data Democratization Podcast. I'm Alexandra Ebert, your host and Mostly AI's Chief Trust Officer. And I'm so excited to be back after our summer break, particularly because we're kicking things right off with a bang. Today, it's my pleasure to welcome not only one, but two esteemed guests and true thought leaders in the space of data and AI literacy. DataCamp CEO Joe Cornelissen and their brilliant VP of curriculum, Maggie Rines. And as many of you know, DataCamp's mission is to democratize AI and data skills, which is essential not only for aspiring data scientists, but literally for each and everyone. And in this episode, we're going to cover AI and data literacy in detail, what it is, why it is important, and also Maggie's and Joe's best tips and tricks how you can successfully introduce related programs into your organization. But not only that, we also talk about the importance of data access and synthetic data to make sure that your data and AI literacy efforts stick and that you can demonstrate an impact, both on your organization's bottom line as well as on individuals in their day-to-day jobs. We also shed light on how governments can approach AI and data upskilling on a national scale, as well as on how generative AI is going to influence and hopefully democratize education at scale. So there's a lot to take away for everyone in this episode, particularly if you think that data literacy isn't for you. So stay tuned. And before we dive in, definitely go and check out the vast resources DataCamp is going to share over the course of the entire month of September during their annual Data and AI Literacy Month. They are top-notch experts sharing their knowledge during webinars, podcast episodes, and even a virtual conference on September 28. And the best of all, it's completely free of charge. So check this out directly on DataCamp or via the link in the show notes. But now, let's welcome Maggie and Joe. Welcome to the Data Democratization Podcast, Maggie and Joe. It's so great to have you here. I'm a huge fan of DataCamp and I was very much looking forward to have this discussion today with you. But before we dive into all the interesting topics that we have prepared, could you maybe please both introduce yourselves just briefly and maybe also share what drives you or what makes you passionate about the work you do?
Sure, yeah, I'll go first. So my name is Maggie Rimenzi. I'm the VP of curriculum here at DataCamp. And, you know, I've been at the EdTech space for, gosh, several years now, 5-6 years, not as long as Joe, so he'll get to tell you all about that. But, you know, I love being in the data space. It's something that I never got to experience really when I was an undergrad, and I didn't get to experience it early in my career, and I found data. And that's really what drives me, is that I found data like organically on my own, and I really want to help people do the same thing. And I want to help people find their own voice in data and their own kind of community and career, if that's what they're looking for.
That sounds great. If you say you found data, how did it happen? Did it just arrive under the next corner, or what was the process like?
Yeah, no, I was in grad school, and I had never taken a business class in my life. I was a science major undergrad, and I worked at a subsidiary of Pfizer for several years out of undergrad, and I worked in healthcare. I had never done anything in finance, never done anything with data, and my first class actually was a computer information systems class in grad school. And I realized right away, like, wow, this is like a really cool space. Like, it's numbers. Like, you know, for me, business was kind of a out of the box topic, as I was a science major. So anything that's kind of like wishy-washy was not maybe as And so being able to see data and see that there is really like, you can find something that is kind of like concrete in it, really drove me into it. And then in doing different internships and things, I realized the impact the data had in different organizations, and that you can really make such a massive impact with really not as much effort as maybe one thinks. And being able to see that kind of transformation is really what sparked my interest initially in data.
That's already, I think, a very good takeaway, that it isn't that much effort as many people might imagine who are scared about data and say, okay, they haven't studied computer science, it's not for them. So very, very cool. What about you, Joe? What brought you into data? What brought you into founding DataCamp, and what drives you?
Yeah. So first of all, very excited to be here, and thanks for the invitation. I'm one of the founders and the CEO of DataCamp, and I feel very fortunate to work on this, because I've always been really passionate about education, about data science, and about entrepreneurship. And DataCamp is really at the intersection of all three of those. What motivates me the most is seeing the impact of the work we do. So that means that can mean people getting new jobs in the data space. It can mean people getting promoted because of their data literacy and data and AI skills. Or it can mean helping organizations kind of flourish because they take stepwise improvements when it comes to data and AI literacy.
I can imagine that this must be super rewarding. So really, really cool. Maybe we've mentioned DataCamp now several times. I assume most of our listeners have heard about it. But for those that are new to DataCamp, can you give us a brief overview what it is all about?
Sure. Yeah. So our mission is to democratize data and AI skills. So I think we're on the right podcast here. Can go to DataCamp and build skills on almost every data or AI topic. So that goes from basic data and AI literacy to Python, SQL, to advanced topics in machine learning, and so on. We really try to cover the whole spectrum. And in addition to that, we allow people to create a portfolio to get certified. And what's unique about our approach compared to maybe other platforms is it's really not about passive learning, it's about active learning. So most of the time when you're on the platform, where you're on DataCamp, you're solving challenges, you're practicing your skills, you're attempting to complete a project. And that way we've helped now over 12 million learners. We're helping more than 4,000 organizations as well upskill their workforce. And the latter has become more and more of a focus in the last few years.
That's truly amazing to hear how many people you reach and also motivate to build up these important skills of data and AI literacy. Maybe since we're going to talk about data and AI literacy quite a lot in this episode, how would you define data literacy and how does data literacy differ from AI literacy?
So, you know, data literacy is really the art of kind of learning how to communicate with data in different ways. And, you know, that could be like actively working in data, like with data in coding or transforming it. But it could also be, you know, just being able to talk to your colleagues about sales metrics or, you know, kind of some things that are KPIs relevant to your own organization. AI literacy is really a very similar kind of concept in the same way. It's being able to talk about AI skills in the same way and how they could impact your organization. You know, how can you build how can you use prompt engineering or prompt, you know, creations in ChatGPT to better, you know, ask the right questions or to come up with the right answers that you're looking for. And so it can be the smallest thing of like, you know, building, again, just talking to ChatGPT, but it could also be building an advanced model and using AI to help finish your code or code correct for you and give you kind of the right or wrong answer in the end of the day. And so it's really the spectrum. And no matter where you are at in your data journey, there's kind of a space in AI literacy or data literacy for you.
That makes sense. And I think this also beautifully highlights that it's not only a topic for the data scientists or for those which have the objective to build AI themselves. But if you just think a few years in the future, potentially every role will have some touch points with AI, with data. And there, I think it's good to have some general understandings, concepts in mind about privacy, about AI ethics, responsible AI, prompt engineering, and all the things that already quite early in your contact with AI are of importance and that are far, far earlier from building AI yourself.
Absolutely.
And maybe, Joe, since you mentioned that for DataCamp, it's now becoming increasingly important to help organizations on their journey towards more data and AI literacy, why should businesses even care about that? Why should they care about establishing data and AI literacy within their workforce?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. So if you go back 5 to 10 years, I think the challenge a lot of organizations were facing in the past was they were just getting ready to set up their infrastructure. They were moving their data to the cloud. They were ensuring their data infrastructure in general was in place and the data availability was done. I'm not saying that's done, but I think a lot of organizations have tackled those challenges or have started to tackle those challenges. The big problem a lot of organizations face now is now that they've done that is the fact that they're struggling to get their employees to have the right skills and they're struggling to shift their culture to be more data-driven and more data-informed. And if you don't have that, it creates all sorts of problems. Number one problem is simply communication between technical and non-technical employees. The value of having data teams, data science teams, goes down tremendously if it's really tough for data teams to communicate with rank and file employees, and the other way around as well. And so you have to ensure that people can speak the same language and that they can understand each other. And if you want to make data-driven decisions at scale and make better business decisions, you need to have a basic data and AI literacy across the organization for that to work. So I think that's why it really matters, and it's a top priority for a lot of companies is what we're hearing.
This absolutely makes sense. And we oftentimes also, when we have guests on the Data Democratization podcast, look into, okay, why do so many AI projects not make it into production? And there it so often comes down to this expectation management that those who are not data and AI literate either have overinflated expectations or not necessarily an understanding what the cool things are you can do with data and AI. And so I can totally imagine that bringing this more on the same level can help an organization to really get use out of these machine learning and AI initiatives. Maybe I think everybody, or I hope everybody listening, will agree that building up data and AI literacy is an important point in an organization's journey towards becoming more data driven. But how to do it? Do you have any like lessons learned, success factors that you encountered when you worked with so many organizations?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, because I think the big thing is that every organization is different, and organizational structure is a huge thing in this. I think, you know, we see all these startups that do really well with, you know, taking advantage of AI early. And it's a lot of times because of the size of the company. You know, they're small, they're a little bit more nimble, you know, maybe their technology is a little newer. So It adapts easier to some of those newer technologies that are just popping up. Whereas an older company, something that has been around a little bit longer, has a little bit more of a more challenging time sometimes adopting to those types of things, just more because technology resources, they're quite different. If you're changing or implementing like a new technology or tool within an organization that has 20,000 people and 1,000 different archaic, you know, systems.
Yeah.
A challenge in that sense. But the big thing is having people who are super passionate within an organization that really want to drive adoption of those types of things. You know, seeing people that are not necessarily just part of HR in a learning and development team, I think is the biggest key in driving, you know, company-wide adoption of any kind of data initiative. You want to have it coming from those data teams. You want it coming from the technology teams and really pushing kind of like the impact that a company can truly see. If you only have buy-in from HR that's like, oh, look, we've heard that this is important, you should do this, you know, that's when, you know, the business teams are going to be like, I'm not really sure I buy this. But it really can truly show like the impact that you're having from like, what is data doing for your company? Like, how are your data driven decisions impacting your bottom line? How is it impacting each person within that organization? Or how does your job really relate to data? Those are things that kind of help to ensure company wide buy-in, because it's not just a top down approach. It has to come from the bulk of the people. You know, you have to have buy-in at all different levels for there to be success in any type of initiative.
Understood. So basically, if HR drives the initiative, then they're maybe not the best equipped to demonstrate this impact and know where to put projects to make sure that you can see these early successes. So what else is important when you say it should be the data teams, not the HR teams driving this, having buy-in from everybody? What else is important to be successful, or what are challenges that organizations frequently need to overcome?
Yeah, you know, I think going farther into this is that, you know, you always want to have people that can show the value that they're bringing to the table and really like, what is that impact? And that can be a challenge. I think a lot of times people see or they look at data kind of initiatives and they're like, I don't really know what the benefit is in the long run. Like, what are you really doing? And I think that that's always been an issue, and it continues to be an issue that a lot of companies continue to have, of like showing the value that they're really bringing. Because it's not always like a dollar sign that just is like, oh, this is our data value. We did this and now we have this much money that came back to us. It's a little less concrete than that. And so, you know, you want to have, you know, an organization that understands that growth and like this type of thing isn't going to necessarily impact bottom line today, but by giving their time to their employees, like, and that's a challenge, can be a challenge of like giving your time to the employees, like giving them the time to really educate, learn, blocking off time in their calendars, giving them access to a thing like, you know, data camp where they can learn. It is really important. And those are the types of things that over time, you're going to start to see the value kick in. You're going to see operational efficiencies in the work that they're doing, whether it's creating a data model or running the same types of reports that they do. They might be able to find efficiencies by utilizing new data technologies, new data tools, new data skills that they're gaining by devoting time to kind of learning.
Understand. I see, Joe, you want to add something, so please go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to add one thing, which is we've seen the most success in organizations where it's both learning and development, as well as the data leadership, kind of supporting initiatives to upskill the organization when it comes to data and AI skills or change the culture in a certain way in that area. And one particularly interesting thing is we've seen now several organizations that have a head of data literacy, even as a role.
Okay,
and it's sort of a role that sits between L&D and the analytics and data team. And that the sole kind of purpose of that role is to up-level the organizations in this area. That's obviously the dream scenario. A lot of companies are either not large enough or they're not
yet there
in their journey yet. But it's a very interesting sign to see kind of new roles emerge because it usually means something is really changing. But I also agree with what Maggie says, like you need to top down buy-in, but, but quite often what we see in successful organizations is that it starts very much bottom up and that even organizations that have kind of a push from the top down, they still underestimate the demand that exists, the latent demand that exists with their workforce. Quite often organizations are surprised how many people sign up for workshops for like Datacamp, for example. So it's not top down, it's not bottom up.
Yeah,
ideally, it's a combination of the two.
I can totally relate to that. When I think of our customers we are working with, we also see this. Some organizations use synthetic data to solve a specific problem. There's, I don't know, an AI team that wants to build a better prediction model, but they don't have granular data to access. So there they use synthetic data. But it's really stunning to see those organizations where also the leadership, the data leadership has recognized the potential and also the need for data and builds up this internal synthetic data lakes where then suddenly every department, every intern, every leader can access the customer base in a privacy safe form and then to see what type of innovation emerges from that. And that so many departments that are not like traditionally data driven are super interested to get their hands on this type of data because they've never ever seen it before. So this actually brings me also to my next question because Maggie emphasized how important it is to show impact and also have this connection to, okay, this is not only an important skill to have, but how can you apply it in your business? How would you imagine this playing out if organizations both work on the data literacy, but then also on the data access with synthetic data and other technologies to make sure that employees can work with relevant data that belongs to the organization and that they can actually also then use much more practically relevant as opposed to just learning data literacy with the toy data sets that we have on Kaggle and other platforms?
Yeah, great question. You know, one of the big things that we definitely see or I've experienced as I've worked in a large bank is data access. It's one of the foundational pieces of kind of data literacy and like building a data culture is getting people to kind of feel comfortable utilizing data and being able to find it. But that's also one of the things that is under the biggest lock and key. You know, we want to give people access to data, but we're also like, wait, like, you shouldn't be seeing somebody's social security number or, you know, their really private information that's necessarily relevant. So what do? So a lot of times the answer is, well, we're just not going to give anybody access to anything because, you know, that's like the safe thing. But I have seen with synthetic data, it really gives an opportunity for, you know, people to be able to have access to data in different ways. And It's in a safe environment. They're able to actually see the data, interact with it. They don't know that it's, they don't necessarily even need to know that it's not real data, but it's like mirroring the information that they have in their own organization. Mm-hmm. And this way, they're able to actually explore data. I've seen so many people in organizations, especially when I was in banking, that they were working in a branch and they got access to kind of a data platform. They were able to see it. And then they'd start coming to our Tableau workshops because they were like, hey, like I saw this. I want to be able to do this. How do I do it? I don't even know what Tableau is, but like, can I use this? Can I try to do it? Because giving access to data really creates that data curiosity. And like, that's how I got involved in data in my own data community. You know, that's what I saw as I had access to data. I learned a couple of skills. And I was able to apply those skills to what I was working on, and I had fun doing it. And that's what drove me to the data community. And that's how we see a lot of people getting involved in data. If they never have access to data and they don't have access to tools, they're not going to understand the impact. They're not going to be able to make those connections in the same way. And so synthetic data definitely gives such a great opportunity for so many people that never would have had it before.
Absolutely makes sense to say, okay, if you have never touched it, you don't even know what you're missing out on. And I think you also, when we had the prep call, you had this fantastic story of your husband, who was also not traditionally a data savvy individual. Maybe you can retell this for our listeners.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like if you've heard me on a podcast, you've probably also heard this. It is definitely one of my favorite. But, you know, I've been in the data space for years now, and my husband is definitely not in the data space. He's in sales in an organization, and I constantly preach to him about using data and, like, you know, showing him how to create different dashboards and different reports and things like that to show his, like, the impact of the metrics that they're really trying to track. So he started doing this on his own and began bringing this to his own team of, like, hey, look, like, when we do more calls each week, like, this, it's this, like, over the next 3 weeks, we end up closing more deals. Or, hey, like, look, like, you did more proposals, and now our bottom line or your, like, bonus is growing because look at these more, like, more proposals go out. So you're able to translate it in. And for him, you know, having these really small things, which are now his automated little reports that he's put together, you know, his team has been able to make a huge leap in seeing, like, oh my goodness, like, what I'm doing here, like, I can visually see the impact that it's having in my own bottom line. Like, you know, they make a bonus based on how much money or how many deals they close, and they're able to really see the impact that they're having, and it motivates them in a different way to actually, you know, do the role that they're set out to do. And now they understand, like, why do they have these specific targets? Instead of it being like, oh, having five proposals a week, it's an arbitrary number in their head. Now they're like, oh, like, I have five, because if I have five and, like, three drop off, now I still have two, and these two can translate into closed deals. And they're really able to see that. And so when Ken is onboarding new people, he shows this to them right away, because they're like, how do I have success? Like, how do I get to success? And he's able to show them, like, look, if you do this, like, this is what has happened with your peers on the team. Like, if you're doing these types of things, it's going to lead to this type of an outcome for you. And those are just small data, like, wins that they're able to see and really have. And it impacts them in a much different way, because now they're motivated to do these things that seem boring and silly. But when you put something kind of, like, visually in front of them, and that's really why I think data storytelling or dashboarding visualizations have really transformed data in a different way as well.
Yeah, I really love that story. So thank you very much for also telling it on the Data Democratization podcast. I believe, Joe, you also wanted to add something, or if you don't have it, like, on top of your mind, I would be super curious to also get your input in terms of, you mentioned data culture earlier. So we had establishing data literacy, having access to data. Is there anything else that when you work with organization, you find to be important so that at the end of the day, organizations really are in this position where they accelerated data-driven innovation, AI innovation? Are there some other, like, puzzle pieces that are important in this context?
Yeah, I think if you break it down, there's different components. I think if you start with people, it's about kind of data and AI literacy for the whole organization. But when it comes to experts, it's less about upskilling people to become experts in a lot of organizations. Their biggest challenge right now even in this market, is finding the experts. Senior mm-hmm. data engineers, senior data scientists, their senior machine learning engineers, they're still really hard to find. So hiring is definitely still a challenge for a lot of organizations. And that's true at the expert level. And you can solve some of that through upskilling, but not 100% typically. When it comes to people, another challenge is just people in leadership having enough of an understanding of data and AI. And some of that can be achieved through upskilling and reskilling. But ideally, there's a healthy mix there where enough people in leadership positions actually have a bit more experience as well. And I think because it's so new, especially everything related to AI, there's just not enough leaders out there.
That's true.
To go and hire. So to some extent, you don't have a choice. You have to invest and upskill.
Yeah, yeah. How do you
the workforce? Yeah,
yeah. How do you actually foresee this to play out in, let's say, like 3 to 5 years time? Just thinking of all these building blocks that are currently popping up, tools like GPT-4 that help you with certain tasks and get much more people into a position. I mean, just I used Workspace the other day that you have on DataCamp, where you have now this API to use AI and code something for you, which is really fantastic and allows you to just prompt something in natural language. And then you have the code there. So this, of course, gives a much broader access to talent that can operate these types of tools. And then we also have all these different building blocks and kind of pre-trained systems that we can get from large cloud providers, which I think would also develop massively in the coming years. So how do you envision this to play out? Will we always need to have more of these experts? And if we don't have enough now, how are we going to get them? Does it have to be upskilling at the end of the day? Or do you think that increasingly we can have more and more like data science citizens or something like that, because the tools just make it much more easier to be operated if you're not the true expert?
Yeah, I think what's exciting right now is that AI itself is going to create more citizen data scientists and is essentially giving superpowers to citizen data scientists. Mm-hmm. You used to have to be able to write some SQL or write some Python. It's still an essential skill, don't get me wrong. But you're also going to be able to use natural language to query data and, mm-hmm. and to kind of adjust reports and so on. We have our own product called Workspace, where we essentially want to help people transition from learning to doing and make it really easy for them to get started with data and write their own reports or write their portfolio. So I think one impact AI is going to have is it's giving superpowers to the citizen data scientists. At the same time, I don't think that's going to be a replacement from having experts. I think at the expert level, the same thing will happen. Mm-hmm. And it has happened to some extent. If you look at software engineers, these new tools already make some software developers, and especially the more senior ones, they make them 30, 40, 50, 60% more effective. And we're just at the start of this. So imagine what that's going to look like 1 to 2 years from now. The same thing is happening for data scientists. So whether you might have a 10x or developer or data scientist, you might get 100x or 1000x data scientist in the future. So that means those people become even more valuable. I'm not so sure that's actually going to solve the recruiting problem, because these people will become even more but valuable. So it could actually achieve the opposite as well.
Makes sense. So truly exciting times ahead. Maybe Maggie, I'd love to get your perspective on this as well. Joe and I already talked now a little bit about this. Okay, on the one hand, organizations want to establish AI and data literacy, but just if we observe what has happened in the past few months and this kind of widespread adoption of GPT-4 and other tools like that, how is AI impacting the field of education at large? What's your take on that, and what are you most excited about?
I think that AI is really impacting the education sphere in the sense that it's giving access to people who might not have had access necessarily before. You can go into GPT-4 and really query something and learn something right away. You're finding things much easier, and the accessibility is really like through the roof. what I think that's going to happen long term is that, you know, in a lot of countries, especially in the US, education is super expensive. You know, it's out of reach for a lot of individuals. And so having access to things like GPT-4 or DataCamp or other kind of tools gives an easier, much less expensive, much faster way to learn the skills that they might have learned in an education atmosphere. The other thing is that higher ed has traditionally always been a little bit behind. You know, tools and technology, things change so drastically that, you know, I remember even when I was a kid in school, you're using books that are 20 years old. Like, those are the textbooks. And, like, I will say probably when I was in school, that was mostly okay. But today, that's not necessarily okay. You have to be really up to date and really, you know, in today's, like, understanding of what's happening to really understand. Otherwise, these kids are going to be graduating undergrad. And, yes, they're going to have some great tools and there's great skills, but they might not need the things that they might not have already know the things that they really need in those first roles that they're going to have, especially in the data space. And so if they go to if they come to DataCamp, they're going to be able to learn a lot of those skills because we're really working to update content in real time and give access to the newest technology skills.
Yeah.
The flip side to this is also that there has to be an understanding or kind of this agreement with companies that 4-year degrees aren't necessarily the key to success. Like, I still see a lot of jobs that are like, oh, you know, bachelor's degree required, master's degree required. And, you know, if somebody's certified as a data scientist and has taken a ton of skill assessments in AI and machine learning, like, who's to say that they're not an expert in those topics? You know, and I think that we have to be more accepting of these non-traditional routes because AI is really disrupting education and we have to let it disrupt it because that's the only way we're going to grow as an organization and really a society.
That makes sense. And I think that's not only, I mean, it's particularly true for data and AI roles or heavy fields, but I'm just thinking I have quite a few professors of marketing in my network and they always tell me they have this real struggle of what do they teach students now? Because once they finish their bachelor degrees in 3 years' time, the tools already will have developed impressively that you maybe use something completely differently. So I think that's really interesting to see how it impacts education. And one other thing, since you mentioned the data camp strives to have like the most up-to-date and relevant topics. I'm always wondering, how do you pull that off? Because whenever I observe the AI space, it's so hard to keep track with everything that's happening. So how can you manage to do what you do so successfully? And how do you decide which topics are most important to have courses, webinars, tutorials on next?
You know, we're lucky that we have a really diverse group that works DataCamp that are really skilled in lots of different areas. So we're able to bring in tutorials or podcasts like this or webinars or different things really quickly that showcase a lot of the, you know, the hottest things that are in the world. And we're able to bring in, you know, the top kind of people in those industries as well to teach us those things. For courses, it's a never ending process of research and more research and more research and talking to people and all that stuff. And, you know, DataCamp, we are great that we have already been around for about 10 years and have a really good network of instructors. And because of that, we have a great network to be able to find new great instructors that are all over the world that are already experts in these things. You know, generative AI is pretty new. LLMs, I mean, they've been around for a while, but the topic has definitely exploded in the last 6 months. And so we're able to tap into those networks of people who are the most skilled in the world in those to come and help us teach our learners. You know, we don't necessarily tell everybody that we don't pretend that we're experts in every single technology. You know, we want to help find the best experts in the world to help us teach those technologies and those skills to everybody because we definitely value the high quality learning and we definitely want people to feel that they're able to come to DataCamp and be getting the most up-to-date content and learning and knowledge and do that across a wide variety of different modalities.
That's truly stunning. And in July, we also did this webinar on synthetic data together. And it was just so wonderful to be in contact and in touch with your community. And I think it felt like a synthetic data world tour because we had people joining from all the different continents. So truly amazing what you've built up here. Maybe also, Joe, what's your perspective on how AI is impacting education? And what I would also love to hear from you again, we discussed this already in our pre-production call. You shared something I find truly impressive. impressive that DataCamp also is available for free for so many teachers and professors and also students to really help us upscale and or kind of upskill at scale. So was this one of the kind of driving factors for you that you observed the challenges that organizations, nations even face, that you decided to go this step and provide this valuable tool for free?
Yeah, so maybe let's take the last part first, then let's talk about how AI will impact education in general. So yeah, DataCamp is available for any teacher, any professor, anyone in high school that wants to use this in a classroom setting. We essentially provide it for free. We have thousands of professors from all over the world, enabling a few hundred thousand students through this mechanism. And I think the fact that we have such adoption, even though we don't do any kind of huge marketing push around this, shows that a lot of teachers really want to bring those kind of courses and those skills into the classroom. But part of the challenge is that they're trying to catch up as well, and then don't always have the time to become experts in all these new fields. And so we kind of help them that way. And it's been a very effective program. We do it for teachers and then we help nonprofits as well around the world. Now to address the first part of your question, I'm super excited about the impact AI will have on education, because if you go to the essence, the most impactful, the most efficient, effective way of educating someone, there's been a ton of research around this, is usually to have one-on-one tutoring, coaching, and to then have someone do challenges and bring the learning experience as close as possible to what they'll eventually do. It's kind of like the apprenticeship model. The challenge with that is it's incredibly expensive in most countries. And I think what AI will now enable us to do, not just us, but any education company in the world, is to create these one-on-one tutors, to create these AI tutors for all different use cases, and to offer the best kind of educational experience for every student in the world. And most importantly, to be able to do that at a very low cost. So I'm super excited about everything that will happen there. So DataCamp has already integrated some smaller AI features into our product right now. And we're also building towards that AI tutor that will be your personalized kind of guide. And I think those will eventually have a massive impact on the effectiveness of education and kind of the availability of education as well.
I can imagine, and this is also an area I'm excited about, similar to what Maggie said earlier. Just when we think of which percentage of the world is not capable to write English or one of the common languages of the internet, the capabilities that we have with natural language processing now actually are the key to unlock the knowledge base that we have here for the entire world. So that's definitely one area I'm super excited about. One other thing, though, I'd be curious to get your perspective. I deal a lot with policymakers with responsible AI topics. And one thing that oftentimes comes up, particularly now with the discussions on ChatGPT and similar tools, it's not necessarily clear which data they were trained on, and also with the kind of free text responses that you get, what type of biases, what type of worldviews get into the kind of output that's provided. So when I think back to school, for example, when we were taught critical thinking, teachers exposed us to a whole spectrum of different information, more left-wing, right-wing media, something like that. How do you foresee this impacting this, what we just discussed, when we on the one hand have the potential to use AI for a more one-to-one set, but haven't yet fully figured out what is actually taught, which kind of worldview, which kind of where is it on the spectrum, what you get out? What's your perspective on that?
So I think it's sort of what's happening now. It's just going to happen at scale, right? If you look at education around the world right now, there's impact of the country you grew up in. I grew up in Belgium, which Belgium has certain biases. Maggie grew up in the U.S. And I'm sure there are already differences in kind of what teachers told us and what they didn't tell us. That's not just going to get encoded into into the AI tutor. But then there's differences between school systems within different countries, and I think that's going to get encoded into Catholic schools, different types of schools, which I think also are going to get encoded. So I think you'll get different layers, and the dream scenario ultimately is that you have choice at the student level around how you want to personalize your AI tutor. That's what I hope will happen. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. When you just described, I'm also not sure how it will play out. I think it would be super helpful to have this kind of diversity and have a Belgium worldview AI tutor and a US worldview AI tutor. But just if we think on the current costs of training these large language models, I'm wondering if we will, for example, have Austria is also not the largest nation on the earth. So will we have all this diversity, or will it kind of monopolize in some areas? So that's definitely, I think, a problem we might need to solve. But if we can solve it, I think the potential of having this one-to-one tutoring is really going to have a massive impact on the education ecosystem. So maybe in interest of time, one other thing that I absolutely wanted to discuss with you, we now talked more on the kind of how to establish data and AI literacy within an organization, within a business. But of course, data literacy is said to be one of the most important skills of the 21st century. So we also need to have it on a global scale, on a nationwide scale. How to actually, as a government, approach this topic? Do you have any recommendations from your experience to establishing data literacy? How governments, how nations could go about establishing this at scale?
Yeah, so I think the first thing I would say is that it's really important for countries to invest in this area, to preserve competitiveness, but also to and this ties back to your earlier question, to preserve the values of a certain country. They need to be part of this game. And I think most governments at this point, they are aware of that. At the same time, if you look at the level of investment from governments, I think it's still fairly low compared to how big the shift is and how important it is geopolitically. For example, if you look at the level of investment in China in AI education, it's really high. And I do think some other countries have to probably step up their game if they want to remain competitive. We have worked with some government clients. We have worked with U.S. government agencies as well as the government of Singapore. It's not that dissimilar in a way from working with organizations in terms of up-leveling and upskilling the government itself. Where it is different is that the government obviously can mandate that in every high school, certain skills need to be taught. And I think that's a really important mechanism that where we are starting to see change, but it's still at the very early stages. If you think about data science, there's been a big shift at universities. In a lot of high schools, it's still not really a priority, or not as much as it should be, in my opinion. And I think with the kind of evolution of AI, that should be that should be something everyone in high school is taught, in my opinion. The risks, the opportunities, and it's not yet the case.
That's true. So maybe Maggie, since Joe mentioned the level of investment is not necessarily there where we want to have it, you earlier mentioned that the education system so far not necessarily were the fastest in integrating new knowledge, new content. So what would you wish governments would do now to set their nation up for a better future in the space of data and AI?
Just like in organization or people, CEOs need to understand the impact of data and AI. I think that government leaders have to do the same thing. And I think that that's something that hasn't necessarily always been at the forefront. I mean, I think about the US, and so many of our leaders in the US are, they are older, we'll say that, like, in a nice way. And, you know, they're not as up to date on technology. I mean, you watch C-SPAN all day and see some of the questions that get asked. And I think it's the first step has to be that they have to understand what data, AI, what these skills can really do for them, but also what they can do for their constituents, like the communities that they are within, and really advocate for them. That has to be the first step, in my opinion. And, you know, we want to get people to a place where we're then able to adopt quickly. I think in a lot of countries, policymaking takes a really long time. And AI and data is fast moving. And you already mentioned that China is already on top of this. And so if other countries really want to be on top of it, they also have to be maybe a bit more nimble in the way that we make decisions and quickly adopt to things. And also it goes into even, you know, if you think about, I think about the US because I live here and I've always been here. But, you know, if I think about going into different communities, there's a huge like disparity within each community of, you know, their economic wealth within those communities and what are the resources that are kind of like capable or we're able to provide. You know, I look at the school districts and it's based on tax dollars that go into it. And so it's a huge disparity. And so like there's also a big chance that we're going to continue to further divide those kind of economic classes with data and AI investment if it's not really done uniformly within communities equally. Because if we're basing it on tax dollars, for instance, then, you know, there's some communities that are really going to flourish, and then there's others that are going to fall behind and suffer and continue to kind of expand those disparities. So I think it's got to be a really sensitive approach. But like I said, first step is definitely for our leaders to really understand these impacts and educate themselves further.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. One thing I'm just worried about is the speed. If we first have to build up these skills within public sector, and at the same time, everybody coming from this data and AI space wished that this was already started in education like 10 years, 15, 20 years ago. So how we will actually be fast enough to transition to a more data literacy and AI literacy at scale. Do you have kind of, what do you think is realistic, or where could we get like in the next 5 years in terms of data literacy at scale? What do you envision the kind of status quo to be then?
It's hard. I guess I'll say it's hard to envision like a status quo per se compared to where we're at today. But I do think that it's important for in the short term, everybody to do what they can and to really take advantage. Like, you know, obviously it's great if the government gives us all these resources, but it's also something that anybody can take advantage of right now. We, you know, most people have a smartphone, you know, or a computer or something, or even public library access, most likely, you know, and we're all able to really take advantage of kind of learning if we really want to. You know, right now, data, AI, they're part of our everyday lives, whether we really know it or think about it or not. You know, I'm sure most people have an Instagram or a Facebook or a Twitter or the new Threads that just launched a couple days ago. You know, we all have something and we're all constantly looking at the different data points that come in, or the weather app on our phones. We hear all these different things. And so we're already knee deep in data. And so, you know, we can take advantage of those things. We don't have to wait for the government to also on board, but it's also something that the government can take advantage of now. They don't, I mean, yes, I want them to kind of understand data more, but they can also bring in people who know more about data and kind of rely on their expertise a bit and learn while they're also like updating our infrastructure, our systems, or, you know, things that are publicly available in the country right now. They don't have to wait for all that stuff to happen. So my hope is that those types of things can really be expedited. And, you know, we're living in a day and age in 5 years where, you know, data and AI skills or access is something that's not like, we're not talking about it right here, like right like this, like how can we get people access, but it's already accessible. People already kind of are aware that it's there and we're able to then take advantage of it.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, everybody can just go on data camp in the internet and build up and start kind of taking the education in their own hands with the data access. I'm a little bit more skeptical, you know, I'm working a lot on the policy level. And while there is this vision of so many nations or economical unions to become an AI leader, in my opinion, they're not necessarily looking for this data democratization, open synthetic data aspect enough, because if only large organizations have access to data, then I not necessarily see this ecosystem flourishing, where startups, SMEs, researchers, nonprofits, and even public sector can really work with data and drive an impact for that. So I think there's, again, quite some work that needs to be done. Maybe, Joe, building up on what Maggie said, what would you say is the best way to get started for every individual to become more data literate if they haven't yet touched into the data space so far? So kind of not waiting on the government to serve everything on a silver platter. What would be your advice?
My very best advice would be go to datacam.com, create an account, and get started. In all seriousness, I think I'm very optimistic that this is kind of like when the internet came about or when computers came about. People do it just really fast. When they have to, when they see kind of the benefit for them personally and for their organization, for their community. So I'm pretty optimistic that we'll see a very kind of rapid upskilling of a lot of people in society. If you just look at the growth numbers of OpenAI, if that's any indication, that is the fastest kind of adopted product in history of so I think all kind of the data is telling us like this is happening faster than anything we've ever seen. So if you extrapolate that trend, I'm pretty optimistic. That being said, I do think, especially from an organizational perspective and from a government perspective, there are real risks here. And so I think the speed of adoption and the speed at which people get excited about this also creates massive risk, which then in turn kind of mean that there's additional importance of education, ethical risks, all sorts of risks related to bias. I think it's important people are aware of those as they kind of excitedly adopt these new technologies.
Definitely, definitely. So maybe the advice for the individuals would be to go on DataCamp, sign up, create an account, and the advice for government, public sector would be to just join forces with DataCamp for AI and Data Literacy Month, which is forthcoming, but we will air this episode when exactly, DataCamp has the Data and AI Literacy Month, and then take at least 1 month to propel us forward and making AI and data literacy a focus topic in a given country. I think this would definitely be nice to see. Wonderful. I think in interest of time, we need to come to an end, even though I would have loved to continue talking AI and data literacy and how to establish it at scale with you for quite some time. If you have a fairy of AI that would grant you one wish and say, okay, these are the three skills that every person on the planet, data and AI skills, of course, would have in 5 years' time, what would be your pick? What would you choose as the three skills that every person on the planet should have in 5 years' time?
Sure. So I can take this one. So in general, I think having basic skills would be the biggest thing. Understanding data visualization. So can you read a map or a weather map? Can you read like a bar chart, pie charts, things like that? Can you understand probabilities and risks? Because I think that's the most common way for people to understand how statistics might be misleading. You know, you hear about all the time different election results or different kinds of polls that we have, and just the way that they're worded can definitely skew. And then I think understanding different types of bias, because again, going into that misleading, you want to be able to make your own opinion and come up with your own, you know, outcome on things. And data, AI, especially when you have a model that's trained on certain data, you want to be able to kind of read through the lines sometimes and be able to say like, this might not be what I'm reading. It might not be how as good as it seems type of thing. And so being able to really determine those things on your own is going to be super important.
I can fully agree. I also think that understanding biases more and maybe also limitations of AI systems is something that's super important for everybody out there, because we just have these tools now in our pockets at our fingertips. So that's quite important. Joe, since we have our hypothetical data and AI fairy still here, is there something you would add to this wish list?
Yeah, so I would tell the dear data and AI fairy that I wish there would be a lot of people who understand what's possible with data and AI, and who can imagine new experiences, new companies to emerge. Because I do think in the next 5-10 years, we'll see a tremendous amount of positive impact on people's lives from new companies, new products, new features of existing products that will emerge and make people's lives better, whether that's in education or any other sector. I think we see a tremendous amount of progress. And the more people that can participate in that progress, the better for everyone.
Absolutely, absolutely, because only then we will get this diversity and this impact and kind of the way to realize the potential of data and AI for good. So I'm totally on board with that as well. And maybe as a last point, at the beginning we talked about this misconception that data and AI literacy is something for data scientists. And it's a misconception that still many people have when they talk about this. So for those of our listeners who are rather new to this field, who are maybe even afraid to embark on their own data and AI literacy journey, do you have some encouraging or last inspiring words for them to step over this fear and get started?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say, start by saying you've already begun your data journey regardless, even if you don't know that. And again, data is for everybody. It doesn't take a data scientist. I feel like I'm a perfect example of that. I'm not an expert in any coding language. I could get by on all of them, but I'm not great on any of them, you know, and I have been able to find my way and make a really great data career in despite not having the best coding background. It doesn't mean, you know, being in a data career doesn't mean you have to have hard data skills. It means you have to have a passion for what you're working with and who you're working for and what you're trying to teach. And I have that passion. And so if I can find my way in a data career, you can definitely find your way too.
Perfect. What about you, Joe? How would you inspire or encourage our not yet data savvy listeners?
I would second that and say, if you're listening to this on a mobile phone, or if you're watching this on a computer, you have the skills, because those are all new devices that people didn't understand a few decades ago. So I think it's kind of similar, right? And everybody will reach their own level, but there is an opportunity to build a better life if you get ahead of it and if you're faster in kind of learning these skills. So it's a great time to take advantage of that opportunity.
Perfect, perfect. And since everybody has a phone or computer who is capable to listen to this, then there are no excuses and you can definitely get started on your data journey.
Exactly. Italy,
right after today. Well, Maggie, Joe, thank you so much for being with me today here on the podcast. It was a pleasure to talk with you. And I'm very much looking forward to what's yet to come in the upcoming AI and Data Literacy Month on DataCamp. So last year, it was really super cool to follow. Very excited for what you will come up with this year.
Yes, thank you for having us, Alessandra.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This was a lot of fun.
Wow, what a great conversation. I hope you enjoyed talking to Maggie and Joe as much as I did. So as always, if you have any questions, comments or remarks, you can reach us either on LinkedIn or via a short email at podcast@mostly.ai. And as mentioned in the intro, go check out all the resources DataCamp is going to share during this month. You can find the link to their Data and AI Literacy Month in the show note or directly on DataCamp. Also, I'm excited to be part of Data and AI Literacy Month and also be a guest on the Data Framed podcast. So be sure to stay tuned for that as well. With that, thank you so much for listening today and stay tuned for our upcoming episodes.